I got some modifications for the suit.
You want to be able to turn your head and breathe through your nose? I don't think so, Master Wayne. Mr. Wayne.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
My name is Freeze. Learn it well, for it is the chilling sound of your doom.
I feel like if I was in a dark room, right? Like a dark room, cuddled in, about to go to bed, and I heard that voice in the darkest corner of the room, I wouldn't be scared. I'd be like, really?
I'm your new cellmate.
Yeah, like, I don't think I, for as intimidating a person Arnold is, I don't know if he'd intimidate me in that sequence. I'd be like, I'm all cozy, now yeah. I'm dreaming of Arnold.
Your ice puns.
They're whimsical.
They lull me to sleep.
Yeah. I want you to be more like the Mr. Freeze from the animated series that had, like, the real robotic voice.
My name is Freeze.
Yes. What the hell? I don't remember if that's how it was, but...
It might be that.
It was very monotone.
Nora. Moira.
That's what I thought. Like, Moira, I'm on the phone call of my life. Yeah. Then she fell into that stuff, and then he had to go back to Neverland.
That's right.
That's how Hooks happens. But that's not what we're here to talk about, and that is not Mr. Freeze over there. That's Gus, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory. And what we do here on the show, if you're new to the show, is every week we watch a film. We then take to the pod to discuss said film, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. We then take that movie and submit it to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched, and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same film, same story, just modern booking for the modern audience. Now, as I've been saying as of late, we've switched up the show a little bit, done animated movies and imagined them live action. We've done newer movies and imagined them retrocasted. And for today's film, though, we're going back to the classic old-time factory, reviewing our third Batman movie.
Indeed.
We have never done Batman's 89. Mm. Yes. We started with Batman Returns, did Batman Forever, and here we are again, sequel
carryover month
and then some, with some change in that. And we decided to do Batman and Robin. So our formula for our factory will be quite similar to the original formula, but slightly different because we've factoried these characters before.
Indeed, except the villains.
And Batwoman.
Batgirl.
Bat people.
Bat person or
Bat Clooney.
Bat Clooney.
Yeah.
We're gonna recast George Clooney's nipples in this movie. The Batsuit nipples, rather.
The Batsuit nipples, if you could recast, if do you think would it make a difference in the movie at all if he was in the Batman 89 suit, or even like the Dark Knight suit? Like, if you took this movie, I think the only way that this movie would probably be better from the suit that he's wearing, because I really don't think the suit, like the bat nipples, are just a literal nitpick, or a nip pick, if you will.
Whoa.
I don't think the suit would change anything. I think the only suit that could make this movie better is if he was in Adam West suit for the entire movie. Like, if he was in Adam West and Robin was in Burt Ward's.
So, suit. Those suits would make more sense.
Yes.
In regards to this movie. I don't think the suit has much, I guess, issue with the movie. A lot of people poke fun at the bat nipples.
Yeah.
Making it, like, anatomically correct, I guess, is also whatever. But my biggest issue with this bat suit is he's got nostrils. There's nostrils in that cowl.
He's got to breathe.
What about the other
bats? You got nostrils? Does Bruce Wayne have nostrils?
He's trained himself to breathe.
He just not breathe.
Through his mouth.
That's why Christian Bale's just like, he can't breathe through his nose. We think he's making his voice like that, but it's just that he can't breathe. He's got too much fucking shit on him.
I got some modifications for the suit.
You want to be able to turn your head and breathe through your nose? I don't think so, Master Wayne. Master Wayne.
Master Wayne.
Mr. Wayne.
Morgan. What if Lucius was Batman?
I don't think he would last very long.
No, he'd talk them all down.
He'd be like, now.
I'm God.
Now, Ra's al Ghul, stop that now.
He would. Like, my God.
He'd be like, holy shit.
I must paint you. But indeed, we watched Batman and Robin. Last year we did Batman Forever, and the year before that we did Batman Returns. We'll find our way back to Batman 89, I'm sure, one day.
Just for the fuck of it.
Yeah, because
we'll do a Nicholson month.
I was thinking of Batman 89 today because I was listening to the Around the NFL podcast, and someone messed up and said something about a Jack, and the guy that hosts the show is like, and you are my number one guy. And I was like, yeah, it's Batman 89.
That's an obscure quote.
I'm glad
they made it.
Yeah, and they're an NFL product. Like, they are owned by the NFL. So they're not independent or anything. We find our way here.
That 89, good Batman movie.
Yes.
Dark Knight, good Batman movie.
Batman Returns?
Batman Returns, good Batman movie. Depends on who you ask. Batman Forever, same sentence. Batman and Robin, notoriously hated. Notoriously bad. How did you feel revisiting Batman and Robin?
The last time I tried to watch this, I didn't get through the opening, 20 minutes?
20 minutes, yeah.
I didn't get through it, and that's surprising for me, because usually, surprising for really both of us, because I know that you not struggle with this film. You appreciate this film for what it's worth. But usually, like, we like a good bad movie here and there. And, like, I think, like, I was watching Attack of the Clones the other night, and I was having a grand old time. I'm like, this movie's shit, but it's so good. Mm. Like, I love it. Mm. This one, I couldn't do it. It's almost unredeemable, like, in terms of, like, it's not even, like, so bad that it's good, or even, like, fun because of it. It's just too much, and I was, like, almost annoyed by it the last time I had watched it before this go. And while I had many of the same feelings this time around, I still try to have a good time with it, because some of the things that people hate about this movie, I actually think are the best parts. Like, people are like, Mr. Freeze in this movie, played by Arnold. I think that's, like, the best part of the movie is Mr. Freeze. I think Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy is pretty good.
Easily the second best thing about this
like,
movie.
Those are very, like, people are like, they had too many villains or too many plots. I think those two things are the best parts of this movie. After that, George Clooney's Batman, he is the worst Batman. He even admits to being the worst Batman.
He's notorious for paying people back for if they've seen Batman and Robin. Like, hey, I saw Batman and Robin. Like, hey, let me give you some money.
Yeah.
Let me give you a refund on that.
He's apologized for it I think it was a Graham Norton show. I think he apologized on that or something recently. I remember watching. But, clearly the worst Batman. Alicia Silverstone's character as Barbara and playing Batwoman was unneeded. Oh, yeah, Batgirl. Unneeded for this film.
Gotta sell more toys.
Yeah, that was the ultimate. But then even like Chris O'Donnell from Batman Forever to this movie, much worse in terms of his portrayal. It's not his acting. His acting's fine. It's his portrayal and, like, the script of his character and him being, like, this whiny little bitch throughout. jealous.
Jealous, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like, there's no need for this. We didn't need this descent. It's like, they have to take down these two big villains, bigger than the last two villains. Let's have them fighting each other the whole movie.
You know, I won't say my biggest problem with this movie. There's quite
a few. It's the bat card. Never leave the cave without it.
I love that part.
Expiration forever.
Yeah.
Which means it's always expired, goddammit. think about that real quick.
Plot hole.
Yeah, it is. That card's bouncing. It's not working.
My issue with it's Robin's story arc throughout this movie. They settled that in Batman Forever. Like, you don't trust me. You need a partner. I'm your guy. But you don't you don't see me as that. Yeah. You feel like you can do things alone, but you can't do things alone anymore. You need family. You need a partner. And they settled that in Batman Forever. Yes. But in this one, it was just like, that didn't happen.
Yeah. And in Batman Forever, I felt like it was more needed. It was established why he needed the help. It was established as to why he needed Robin. Whereas in this movie, while Mr. Freeze is a bigger than life villain, really, in this one, and his plot is it's probably the most intense. Well, Riddler's plot is pretty out there in terms of like catastrophic, but Mr. Freeze is, I mean, he was going to like freeze all of Gotham and then the world. So like his plot was like world ending almost, but, so his was like a bigger plot, but I do think it's maybe one that Batman could have just handled on his own, probably. And Poison Ivy, maybe not so much because she was hitting them with the pheromones, but, yeah, it was, I don't know. There's so many little things throughout this movie that make it fall apart.
You mentioned that George Clooney is the worst Batman. Let's say someone hasn't seen this movie. Why? What makes him the standout worst?
So Adam West is the original, so he's fantastic. Can't blame him. I hear that. He's yelling at me.
My microphone's
here too. But so Adam West, you can't fault him because one of my faults of George Clooney would be a similar fault to Adam West, but he's the original, doesn't count. Then you have Michael Keaton, who somewhat similar. He drops his voice a little bit when he's playing Batman. He is a little more serious when he's Batman, and then Bruce Wayne, he's a little more
Michael Keaton-y,
yeah. Beetlejuicy, if you will.
Come on.
Let's get nuts. Then you have Val Kilmer.
He's got lips,
and he has a really good look. I also think he's a really good Bruce Wayne. Like, I think he was one of the best Bruce Waynes. If not, I think Val Kilmer might have been a better Bruce Wayne than Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne.
Get out of here.
Go back and watch Batman Forever. We obviously talked about it in the last time we talked about Batman. But Val Kilmer's Bruce Wayne's really good, and his Batman's pretty good, too. And he also does a little bit with his voice and everything, and he acts. George Clooney does not act in this movie. Bale really acts. He really changes.
George Clooney just George Clooney.
Yeah, throughout. This would be like if Matthew McConaughey was Batman, which would be awesome, but it'd also be Matthew McConaughey the whole time. He'd be like, I'm driving the Batmobile before I was getting paid to drive it.
Where am I going?
Yeah.
In this Lincoln with wings.
It's like, will you be taking the Maserati then? I'll drive the Lamborghini then. Much more subtle. He's like, I was driving a Lamborghini. I'll take the Lincoln. Now I want Matthew McConaughey as Batman.
The other car.
That's what I'm getting at though, is George Clooney is just George Clooney throughout. He does not change his voice or anything, you know.
He doesn't even change his mannerisms because he does a lot of head bobbing when he talks.
Hi, everyone. I'm Bruce Wayne. Hi, Freeze. I'm Batman.
He's like, hi, Freeze. I'm Bruce. I'm Batman.
I'm Batman. And I'm fresh off of VR fame.
This was like his first big motion picture, you know, starring role. He was big in ER and television.
You look at him and you're like, George Clooney on paper, George Clooney as Bruce Wayne makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know if it makes sense as Batman, but George Clooney as Bruce Wayne makes tons of sense in my head. When I see it, I'm like, yeah, I can see that because he looks like a billionaire playboy philanthropist.
Yeah.
It felt like he just mailed it in. Like, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna set. But I honestly think it's more of a, just based on what I've heard from him and seen interviews based on like what he's talked about with this film, I don't think he understood the film. He's like, comic books? You mean those things that nerds read? Like, that's what I felt like, because he's like, yeah, we went to comic book conventions, and these people get nuts about it, and they're crazy about it. I'm like, yes. Like,
he's like, I I never read any Batman. I never read any comic books. I was too busy getting laid.
Yeah, like that's what I think happened. Is he's just like, what do I have to do? And they're like, watch the old Batman movies. Like, all right. And then he watched the Adam West one, which what I was saying earlier is Adam West was just Adam West. Like he was as Bruce Wayne, he was let's go find him, Robin. And then as fucking Batman, he's like, it's Catwoman.
Yeah,
like he was the same person. I think they even knew. Well, now, did the Commissioner Gordon in that the old Batman show, did he know it was Bruce Wayne?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
Because they would come into, like, the Batcave and stuff, though, if I recall.
Yeah, there's been an episode or two.
They had, like, the bat phone and shit.
They had the bat phone that was a direct line to police headquarters, yes.
Commissioner Gordon.
Yes. Yeah, George Clooney in this just doesn't scratch the itch. He'd almost be better now.
Because he probably know what he was doing. I really think that's what happened. Wouldn't you agree? Like, he just didn't know how to play the character.
Yes and no. I mean, that's not all on him, though. That's
on Joel.
That's a Joel Schumacher decision. Joel Schumacher didn't pull anything else out of him, didn't give him a different direction. Yeah. Like, hey, I don't want you to be both Bruce Wayne and Batman at the same time here. You know what I mean? I want to differentiate the two characters. Now, Joel Schumacher didn't care. This movie comes off more lazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only a quick 2 years after Batman Forever, so you know they immediately got into production of this. He was told by studio to make it more toy-y.
He did.
And they certainly did, to the point of, like, every goon that gets punched, there's like a banana peel slipping sound, like and boinking. It's very much a callback to the 60s.
I know you said that before. Yeah, I wanted to say, I think there, I'm pretty sure there is an interview. I want to say it is the one where George Clooney is on. I believe it's the Graham Norton show, and he talks about Joel Schumacher and how he's like, I love Joel Schumacher, but when he was directing me, he would be like, all right, George, your parents just died, and go. And he's like, it was hard to, like, get serious.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
And he's wearing this ridiculous bat suit.
Yeah.
And can't turn his head and can't pee. And
he's a serious actor. So yeah. Now he's like, didn't. And this was before that was seen as, like, a. Well, Michael Keaton probably made it a big deal, and Jack Nicholson was, like, the highest paid actor of all time by that point, so it's, yeah, like,
for that role,
it made sense, but at the same time, I'm sure a lot of actors didn't really see the lucrative nature of it or the importance of playing this superhero.
You know, Val Kilmer, I just watched his documentary, I recommend.
Was it good? Yeah, I wanted to watch it.
Oh, my God.
Sounds horrible, though.
It's like, it's sad. It's a tough watch, but it's brilliant. And he chronicles his time as Batman. Yeah, like, getting the part of Batman's is, you know, a boyhood dream.
Yeah.
But he would love to see himself, and does see himself as, like, a thespian, like the actor's actor. And then he gets the part of Batman, and he found himself hating it because all he was doing was standing around in a suit that you can't even see his face and doing very little acting. He can hardly move in the thing. And he had a miserable time being Batman because of those things. He does not see it as a lucrative thing and turned down the sequel because he just didn't want to have anything to do with it anymore.
And what's funny, though, is, like, I like his Bruce Wayne because of how he acts. Mm-hmm. Like, I liked his style and take on Bruce Wayne. I see Michael Keaton and I just think, that's Pittsburgh right there.
Yes,
but also, I don't know. I don't see Michael Keaton's, like, dark and brooding. Mm-hmm. I just can't see it that way. Yeah. Maybe it's his comedic nature or whatever it have you. But with Val Kilmer and the way he played Bruce Wayne, I saw that dark and brooding and everything. George Clooney, he just looked like he just had sex with Stacey Keibler and he was fine. Like, he's like, my parents are dead. Really? I was there?
Like, it's my fault?
Yeah,
I think it is?
I don't remember. I was busy having sex. Like, that's how it comes across. Like,
too busy getting laid.
He plays it as more of he's the Bruce Wayne that everyone sees, but he's always like that.
Yeah.
Where, like, how Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne has very similar, like, Yeah, they should let me. I own the place. Or he takes like the whole Russian ballet.
Mm-hmm. Like he plays the part.
The playboy, yeah. But like George Clooney does that when he's by himself with like Alfred and shit. Like when he's supposed to be Batman.
Yeah. You want to talk dark and brooding? Think Michael Keaton. Think Batman. Think
Josh or no. Josh Arnett? No. Will Arnett. Josh Arnett. Jesus.
think Michael Keaton. Batman Returns. Turn on the bat signal, and the bat signal shines at Wayne Manor, and it like turns all the things, and he's sitting in the study.
What am I thinking of? He's swinging, swinging upside down.
Hang upside down.
I'm like, fuck, that's good. It's dark and brooding.
Now he has his hand on his chin. Sure. And he's sitting there, and the bat signal hits him. That's dark and brooding. Yeah, when he's sleeping like a bat upside down. Something didn't make sense in this movie, Batman and Robin, dark and brooding. Do you remember the telescope that Freeze turns into a giant Freeze Ray?
Giant Freeze Ray.
And it's
dark and brooding.
It's like spinning, and it's going to crash into like this little tower where those two scientists are standing. To brace himself, he hangs upside down, Batman, and covers his arms across his chest like a bat and hangs upside down. And as it crashes in, I'm like, huh.
Yes.
Never noticed that before.
I mean, there's things about this movie, like, because you even said they wanted to make it more toy-y.
Mm-hmm.
The city, the environments, they don't make sense as a city.
Who's this architect?
Yeah, it's like they're like, let's mix Atlantis with New York City and
this five-year-old's cartoon drawing.
Yeah, and like the Lego movie here. Because there's like statues, and there is the race sequence, which like... To a 12-year-old, I'm sure it was huge.
The 7-year-old, this is my favorite.
Yeah, like, that shit's cool, because it's, like, literally, like, it's what you'd imagine from, like, for an old-time term, like a Saturday morning cartoon. You're, like, viewing bright lights and colors and giant structures and noises, and it didn't meet the target audience. It met their target audience, which was they wanted to sell toys. But the problem is that with these superhero movies, which they've kind of hammered down, is they almost need to be for everyone. Like, most of these superhero movies nowadays are all PG-13, mostly. Some are probably PG, I'm sure, and you do have the R ones as well, but mostly PG-13. But, like, Iron Man is PG-13, but you could let an 8-year-old watch it, and it'd be fine. Or, yeah. Like, a 7-year-old watch it, and they'd be fine. There's nothing, like, gory or brutal about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also fun for an adult to watch. This movie, you could let a 6-year-old, 7-year-old watch it, and they think it's amazing.
It's PG-13.
Yeah, but you can let an adult watch it, and they're like, this shit's awful.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch The Backyardigans.
I agree. I was thinking that while watching it. I was like, why is this PG-13? Because there's a lot of sexual innuendos, and
the darker colors. It could be scary.
There's a lot of death.
Coolio.
I mean, yeah, Coolio's in it. There's droogs from fucking Clockwork Orange in the background. And there's some language. But when I was a kid, I remember our one cousin, it was my first time. No, I saw this in theaters. But I had my eyes covered at this one part. And it was
Uma?
No, Bane. When Bane was transforming. I guess that
could creep you out.
That freaked me out when I was
a
kid.
I mean, he's like convulsing, but getting huge. And
I have a very vivid memory of... A cousin of ours, we were having like a gathering, and he's like, can we watch Batman and Robin? My mother was like, this one part scares him. And he's like, oh, don't worry, it's not that bad. And while we were watching it, I remember him pointing out to me why it wasn't that bad by saying just that. And I'm like, huh, you're right.
Why didn't anyone say that to me when I was afraid of the Grinch? Like, why isn't anyone like, yeah, he's not that scary? I'm like, huh. You don't say. And I look, and he's like, shlunk. I'm like, fuck.
Like, yeah, I never thought of it that way before.
Michael Myers is a little creepy. No, it's not. Shit.
He's really? Not? Oh, okay.
You mean he's just trying to kill them? Oh, okay.
not me.
Not okay. Me. All right. No need to worry. Here I am at 26, and still I like go to lay in bed, and I hear bump, bum, bum, bum. I feel like the episode of SpongeBob where they're spoofing Jaws, and the music, the Jaws music's playing, mm-hmm. and Mr. Krabs opens up the curtain or whatever, and their band's there, and it's like, there you are! Yeah. I feel like that's what happens to me at night, where, like, John Carpenter is in my closet playing the music. Yeah. Like, I need to open that up and get him out of there.
But as soon as you get in that closet, Michael Myers...
Yeah, I know! Time. He'll be coming through with the lights going, and shit. Da-da-da!
Bling! So...
You ever think that? Like, you go downstairs in your glass room and look outside and see him standing there?
I do, but then it's me standing out there, and I'm confused.
That's like some fucking... That's like, what's that movie? 1408. I warned you about 1408, because he's doing that, and then he has the person behind him. We just made a horror movie.
we've touched on Batman. We've touched on Robin a bit.
Touched on horror movies.
let's get into...
Barbara.
Let's get into Barbara.
Save Martha
and Barbara. So
I guess this is technically our fourth Batman movie, if you include Batman v Superman.
Yeah, we should.
We didn't even mention Ben Affleck. Batflack.
I was waiting for you to, but you didn't.
I don't count him, but I should.
I like Ben Affleck as Batman in theory.
I like his Bruce Wayne too.
I like his Bruce Wayne. I like him as Batman. I didn't care for what they, you know. Well, listen to our review of Batman v Superman.
Listen to your thoughts on the Snyder Cut.
Yeah. I would have liked more with him. It's unfortunate that we might not get that. But it sounds like he might show up in Flash. So Batgirl, in the source material, Barbara is a Barbara Gordon.
Yes.
And the daughter of...
Commissioner Gordon.
She becomes Batgirl, and...
She Oracle first, and then Batgirl?
No, she's Batgirl, and through an incident with the Joker, she becomes paralyzed.
She becomes Oracle.
And she becomes Oracle, who is like the eyes in the sky.
Yeah. Persona 5 Oracle.
Yeah. And, exactly. So, and, you know, throughout... source material, it's not all canon, or, you know, different artists get to take liberty with what they want to do, but Barbara has been a love interest of Robin. She's been a love interest of Batman.
Yes.
She's been round.
Yeah.
But she's a classic character and was very popular in the 1960s show. You know, you had that cartoon intro, but every now and then you'd see Batgirl ride up on that motorcycle. You knew she was going to appear. Very popular. So it was only a matter of time before she was brought into these Warner Brothers movies. And at the time, Alicia Silverstone was very popular due to the movie Clueless. It's
guaranteed to put male butts in seats.
Yes. I mean, she was something for my young eyes.
Yeah.
But
now, she was like the girl mm-hmm. at the time, the teen sensation. She wasn't a teenager in this, though, was she? Was in their 20s.
She's probably in her late teens, 20s.
The teen, like, she'd be in the teen magazine and stuff like that. Yeah.
Whatever them kids are reading.
Yeah.
But, you know, just like we mentioned with George Clooney's portrayal, I don't think she was given the direction needed because she's not very good.
I don't know. Who wrote the screenplay on this? Was it the screenplay that causes it?
David Goyer. No, that's not true. David Goyer wrote Man of Steel.
Was it the screen? Do you think it's the writing or the directing? Because I was like, for example, to call to another movie that's notoriously considered bad due to dialogue, Attack of the Clones. Like, Attack of the Clones, Phantom Menace, Revenge of the Sith. One of the biggest things on that is the dialogue's really choppy, and that's the biggest issue. Like, if you were to clean up the dialogue, those movies would probably be a lot more mm-hmm. watchable / less memeable. There are reports from Harrison Ford himself saying that, like, the dialogue in the original trilogy was just as bad in a lot of ways, and Harrison Ford and the other actors would refuse to say lines or, like, change them themselves.
Uh-huh.
But in the prequel trilogy, no one would do that. So, like, do you think that, like, if the dialogue wasn't as choppy? Because a lot of it, I do think, is acting. Like, they're not as serious. Or they, like, even she is, like, I don't know.
So, I mean, the writing, like I said, this movie came out pretty quick after the previous one. This movie, I don't know this for a fact, so I'm just spitting here. But this movie strikes me as a movie that had multiple writers, different drafts, different screenplays they're picking and choosing. And making a Frankenstein monster.
It'll make more toys.
Yeah, and it's ultimately, it's Joel Schumacher, because they work, he works, he sculpts the story, he sculpts the actors. He's the one who could be like, you know what, I didn't care for that line delivery. Can you do it again this way, or try to pull from here, whatever.
Hi, Freeze. I'm Batman. I didn't care for that. Can you try it again? Yeah, sure.
I'm looking for more toy-like. I want more George Clooney.
Okay. Hi, Freeze. I'm Batman. Try it again. Hi, Freeze. I'm Batman. All right, good. Yeah. It's the same every fucking time.
Exactly. So, it's hard to tell. But here's what I'll say, though. Joel Schumacher, I feel, made a fine movie in Batman Forever.
Yes.
I like that Batman movie. So why is this, why'd this one slip up in quality?
The funny thing about Forever 2 is the more I watch it, the more I don't even know if it's I like it or I just respect it as a movie more. Like, I appreciate, that's the word, I appreciate it more the more I watch it. This one, I don't know if that's possible, and I don't know why that really is. This, like, I don't know if I can watch it and, you know, it'll never be like, I'm watching all the Batmans, and I get to this one. I'm like, can't wait. Like,
you don't see it'll grow on you.
No.
I mean, jumping back to, you know, Batgirl, Alicia Silverstone, Barbara, her character, I do feel like it was thrown in here for toys to reach a different demographic, which is fine. Makes sense business-wise. But, man, she sneaks out at one point to go on a like underground motorcycle racing and betting and gambling. She bets with a fellow racer and on the side, like, I bet I'll beat you. And they're exchanging some money. Or no, they didn't even exchange money. There's betting. And then during the race, that guy actively tries to kill her to win. Thinking he does, runs her off the road, off of, you know, down the bridge.
They didn't give money.
Yeah, like, how the hell?
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, how is he going to get?
I don't think anyone
money?
Thought about that.
And then Robin was,
it's like, I'll beat her and win. He kills her. He's like, ha ha. Well, shit.
Exactly. Like, oh,
my money.
It's like,
I'll go get it off her corpse.
It's like Edward Nygma when he pushes his boss down that hallway. Yeah. And he's just like, oh, I almost knocked the helmet away. But yeah, and then, of course, Dick Grayson's there to save the day. Yeah, I just, my tummy.
I was like, let me out of here.
After we're done recording.
I gotta get out of here.
It will get out of here.
Calm down. Everything's gonna be all right.
So, yeah, I don't really care for her.
Alfred's great, as always.
I did like that about this movie. I do like that Alfred is part of the storyline.
Yeah, and it makes sense. That's about as close to emotion you get out of George Clooney.
Yeah.
It's like when he's reminiscing fondly about, like, Alfred taking care of him and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's good. And it does, if there's one consistent piece to all four of the late 80s to 90s Batmans. We'll just call them the 90s Batmans, though, because it's 89. We'll round up. But, and that's Alfred. And Commissioner Gordon, technically.
Yeah,
But Alfred is the consistent centerpiece. He's in every movie, and he is a center role in all four movies.
And Gossip Gertie.
Yeah, and he's...
Oh, she's not the first one.
But he's my favorite... Like, he's, like, my favorite Alfred, just because he's I think of when I think Alfred. And this movie caps off his story, or caps off his, like, you know... Mm-hmm. With giving him probably, again, we said the villains are the best. If the villains are the best part of this movie, the first and second, the third best part is Alfred's arc in this movie.
Because he gets McGregor syndrome, stage one, which is what Victor Freeze, Mr. Freeze's wife has.
Yes.
And that's, we'll get into Freeze here in a minute. That's Freeze's driving force, is he's trying to save his wife from this incurable disease, but she's later on than Alfred is, so there's a possibility of curing him, but he's dying.
Yes.
And I did like that aspect of this movie and that drama. The drama I didn't care for was Poison Ivy.
Even though Uma Thurman's great,
she's
really not needed in this movie.
Yeah.
If they could remove her and just flesh out Mr. Freeze throughout, because Mr. Freeze, in all the comics and everything, he always has a really good, he has a good, like, villain purpose. Like his is, he's one of those like Thanos in Infinity War. They always say like, oh, you like him as a villain because you can actually like understand what his motive is. Same for Mr. Freeze. You can see that he's just trying to save the one he loves, and he'll do anything to like make it happen.
I could be wrong, but Mr. Freeze debuted in the comics, I think in the 40s or 50s. It was very early.
And
he was, you know, villainous foe against Batman, using freeze rays and frozen-based crimes.
And ice puns.
All this way from the 50s until 1992. It wasn't until 1992, during that Batman animated series, that they created that storyline. He didn't have a wife that he was trying to cure. He didn't have this backstory that made you care for him, a sympathetic villain.
Yeah, that's why I think in like retrospect, like he is one of my favorite Batman villains.
Yeah, yeah, he's very deep, and
to the point that I'm upset they haven't used him in a long time.
Yeah, he's also one of the harder villains to pull off in a believable sense.
True.
They did a pretty good job in the Arkham City video game.
Yeah.
Portraying him realistically.
Great fight too.
Yeah.
Great boss fight.
Tough
fight, but it's so cool because it lives by those Mario rules of you have to hit him three times or do the thing to him three times, but you have to do it in a different way all three times because he knows. Like, that's ingenious.
Yeah, so that being said, for a story arc that wasn't created until the animated series, I think they portray it well in this movie. I love Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
It's one of his best performances.
I do like his emotional moments in this movie. I think he's really good.
The idea that people have that Arnold Schwarzenegger is not a good actor is unfounded. He's phenomenal, actually.
I think he's an excellent actor. Yeah. I think he's truly great in this movie. His part is overall silly.
Yeah.
But the way he portrays it is good.
His part's silly, but it's Arnold Schwarzenegger doing the part. Like, I don't think you could put anyone else in that role and they would still be like the best part of the film. Like, Arnold as Mr. Freeze is a reason to watch this movie.
Yeah.
And I don't think if you take someone else from that time, I almost said Stallone, but Stallone is Freeze pretty fucking good too. Dads.
Be like,
well, I killed the dinosaurs.
It was my left hook.
Yeah, you know, I never broke this nose before until you, Batman. but like, if you throw someone else in that role, you get Jimmy Stewart in
there. Yeah, I was gonna say Jimmy Stewart.
I'm gonna blast you with my freeze ray and freeze you, and we'll get PennDOT out here and salt you up. Melt you down.
Yeah. What's another ice bun he has in this movie? He has so many. I can't think of them right now.
Killed the dinosaurs, the ice age.
Yeah, that's good.
Let's kick some ice.
Yeah.
Let's kick some ice. Yeah.
It's like very, very nice.
Very nice ice. Dance.
You know, one line that I often hear people, like, whether on YouTube or in... An ice pun they say that he never says is ice to see you.
No, he doesn't ever say that.
Or ice to meet you. Like, ice to see you. Never.
Arnold, like, I honestly can't off the top of my head think of, like, an actor from that era you put into that role. I don't know if they'd be able to pull it off without some form of gimmick making them, like, you put Jack Nicholson into that role, and it's Jack Nicholson's way of talking and everything, then sure, maybe. But, like, you put, like, a regular old actor into that role, I can't think of any off the top of my head from the 90s.
Not right now, anyway.
Like, that would you be able to throw in there, like, an action star or something like that.
It was Arnold.
Yeah.
He was,
like,
the guy.
Arnold as that is actually good casting. Like, I don't think anyone... You can say that he is objectively not good in the movie, but his casting for the Mr. Freeze that they wanted is perfect.
And his
looks great.
Yeah, I like the costume design. I like the little blue light they had shining at his teeth.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I dug it.
Even his scientist part where he's real Arnold, but he's got the glasses on. His true lies self. Or is Jingle All the Way self?
My favorite line is when he falls into the liquid nitrogen or whatever, and he like gets all frozen. He comes out, he's like,
like, let's just put it this way. Him as Mr. Freeze in this movie is more believable to me than him as like just some suburban dad somewhere in America, like right now. Like when I see Arnold in like Jingle All the Way or even True Lies, even though he's like a spy, I'm like, I don't believe you. Like,
I don't even believe it when I see videos of him on my Facebook timeline of him feeding his miniature horses in his house. I'm like, I don't buy it.
Yeah, you're like, you're not a real person. Like, you don't exist. But like, I think that like I watched Jingle All the Way. I'm like, no.
That's what I'll say. This is the nail in the coffin. If you don't like Arnold Schwarzenegger's Mr. Freeze and his portrayal, then you don't like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Jingle All the Way.
Yeah, which... Hell, same thing.
They act very similar.
Same thing. He's the best part of that movie, too. Sinbad's pretty good in that movie, too, though, actually.
So, yeah, we've covered Mr. Freeze. What about Poison Ivy? We hinted at it and we stepped away real quick.
She's unneeded. That doesn't mean that Uma Thurman doesn't do a good job.
Yes.
Because I think she does great.
Very comic book, which is cool. I'm cool with.
She comes with some plant puns. I don't know any off the top of my head, but I know she talks a lot about plants.
Yeah, she's all about, like, plants are superior beings or creations, rather. Yeah. And she feels, she's like what most people are with dogs. Hate people, love dogs. She hates people, loves plants.
Yes.
And wants to replace the human race as the, what is it, the most dominant species
put
on
them
the planet.
At the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
Plants.
So... her origin is unique, very different than...
Talking in, for you to die!
you know, he, that evil scientist dude, he was the, like, corporate business president in Gremlins 2.
Good.
Yeah.
The second best Gremlins movie.
Yeah. And jumping back to a movie we did in June, Carrie, Ace Ventura 2. When Nature Calls, the Monopoly guy.
Honk, 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 honk.
No.
I know.
The Monopoly guy, that actor, he is Skinny Bane.
Shit.
Before he gets all pumped up with Venom.
Before he becomes Big Bane.
Yeah.
Bigger Bane.
My issue with Poison Ivy in this movie, I really don't have one. She is definitely the more evil of the two.
She doesn't have really, I would say she almost doesn't have a sympathetic nature, but she kind of does, because she was like, she has like a Catwoman-esque origin, where she's like killed by her boss, so to speak, and then, but then just decides to like instantly become evil.
Exactly, and I mean, she uses Freeze as a means to an end. She tricks Freeze into thinking Batman killed his wife and pulled the plug, but actually it was her, which...
Also is good. That's a good like good plot point, but it leads to bloat.
Yeah, it does, and because that is what like instantly inspires Freeze to be like, first I'll freeze Gotham, then the world.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense why they team up. Like I get she's using him to means to end, but it also she's trying to use him to get rid of Batman. But they don't really like work together that much outside of that.
No.
Whereas like Riddler and Two-Face do.
Yeah. It just felt like they're like, Poison Ivy's like, listen, Freeze, we need to team up because the script says so.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And let's team up for like two scenes and then we'll both actually get defeated separately.
Yeah.
like Batman Forever, they go to stop them at the same time. Robin faces Two-Face. And then ultimately, you know, Batman beats Two-Face, but Robin faces Two-Face, and then Riddler faces Batman. Mm-hmm. Like, they fight each other in the same area. This movie, it's like Poison Ivy loses, and then Mr. Freeze, you know, has his ending or whatever. So, she goes over more as a heel, for sure. Like, I like what she does, but she doesn't add much other than that. Like, why should Mr. Freeze be after Batman?
Yeah. Is it just me? Is this weird, what I'm about to say? But at the...
You like nerdy Uma Therma more than Poison Ivy Uma Therma?
Only when she puts on the wig.
Why am I saying Therma? That's such a Pittsburgh thing there. Uma Therma. Is that Thurman? Jesus Christ. Uma Therma. Uma Thermist over there.
During the... I can't remember the name of the event, but when they're like...
Pink Gorilla event.
Yeah, they're like bidding for...
Poison Ivy.
The flower ladies, and yeah. It's going to charity and stuff. But when she's in that pink gorilla suit and she's dancing a little bit, dun, 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 I'm like, I find that arousing. This big monkey dancing.
$400.
And I bid $400,000 for that big pink monkey over there.
Jesus.
I'm like,
then
it's my sexual awakening.
What do you think? What do you think the credit limit on Batman's Forever card is?
8 million. He says it
now. To be 800 million. Think about this. Million. When you open up a credit card, you gotta fucking put your social in there and shit.
That's what I was thinking. Like, well, Batman's two people.
Like there is one fucking like guy running his credit account. It's like, huh? Bruce Wayne and Batman have the same credit. Same credit score, same soch.
And that's when Lucius Fox comes up behind this bank teller, or whatever. He's like, "And your plan is to blackmail this person? Good luck." Yeah. Well, yes. Batman has his own credit card, his own line of credit, up to $800 million.
It's up to forever.
Yeah.
Credit limits forever. Expiration dates forever. Well, never leaves the cave without it.
Bruce Wayne owns this bank, so
he doesn't have a utility belt on his suit, does he? On the Clooney suit?
Yeah, he does.
Does he?
Yeah, it's on there.
Okay. I was gonna say, where is he keeping that card? They got pockets?
It's up his badass. See how tight that thing is? He can't fit a credit card.
Presses in the cap nipples and the ass comes out.
Yeah. It's like, that makes sense.
It does. Sadly, in this one, it does.
It would. You know what bothered me is when he's fighting Poison Ivy and Batman gets all looped up with the vines and gets like dragged upside down. He's hanging upside down. You can clearly see his bat cape. There's a piece of string that ties it to his boots so it won't fall down.
Together, yeah.
I'm like, that. It's stuff like that that bothers me in this movie.
A little lesser quality.
Lesser quality. Like, they didn't lesser try care. As hard. Yeah. They were
it
lazy.
Was, it was I fast. They were trying to put it out. Because ultimately, this movie feels like it's a commercial for toys.
Yeah. I mean, to the point where near the finale, they put on a whole new set of suits. The ice suits. I remember the toy commercials for those ice suit Batman, like with ice fighting gear.
Yeah, why wouldn't you want those as a kid? Like I said, this movie is for kids. That's the problem. That's what it's not for us.
Yeah,
it's not for adults. It's for kids.
Listen, 1997. I was a kid, and I remember getting these toys. Yeah, I remember getting the Batmobile toy. Yeah, I remember getting. I mentioned to you earlier off. Camera off microphone, but there's, you know, those shitty popsicles that are just liquid in the tube. You freeze them and they're cut fantastic. The top off. Yeah,
the best.
There were Mr. Freeze pops, Batman and Robin.
I mean,
freeze pops.
That's
I remember
the thing. Like,
all the time.
I think if I were a kid again, watching through these four Batman movies, this one very, very well could have been my favorite.
Yeah.
It's the most colorful and the fun, like, probably the most fun for a kid to watch, whereas, like, Batman Returns probably scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Even Batman would probably scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Some scary stuff in that, too.
Both of these did scare me when I was
forever,
scared.
I'd just be there for Nicole Kidman, so here we are.
Yeah. Aren't we all?
Yeah. It's boiling acid! My glasses!
You know, there's over 27 ice puns in this movie, and none of them are as good as that line from Batman
Forever. It's boiling acid?
Yeah.
Like, I think acid would be just fine, but it's boiling.
You know what's boiling ass is Bane in this movie. Bane is
He was
wasted.
Not a no need. No,
now, Bane was very popular due to, well, he was popular in the show, but the comic book line Batman Nightfall is where
when he
Bane
breaks
the bat. And Bane is a very formidable foe for Batman. Not only is he able to match Batman physically and defeat Batman physically, but he is a very intelligent character.
When did The Dark Knight Rises come out?
2012.
So 2012, that's what, roughly 10 years ago now?
Yeah.
So I would have been 16. At the age of 16, I did not know that Bane was supposed to be this intelligent Batman. It wasn't until Dark Knight Rises that I was like, oh, wait, like this is how he was more in the comic books. Like he was really smart and super strong and all this stuff. I thought he was always this dumb, stupid, brute Bane.
Just the muscle.
Yeah, because even my two experiences with Bane to that point, because I really didn't read the comics or anything, and I don't really remember if he was that way in the animated series, because I hadn't like rewatched through any of it, but was this movie and Arkham Asylum. And in Arkham Asylum, he's so dosed up.
He's dosed up. He's
dosed up, but he's so like juiced up on
Venom.
On Venom that he's not like an intelligent guy. He's just there, a brute. Mm. So I didn't know that he was supposed to be this way because of this movie.
Yeah. So in the comics, Bane comes to the conclusion that Batman is Bruce Wayne just based on observation. He's very intelligent.
Yeah.
And
what, one of two villains that figure out his identity?
Yeah, just through him and like Hugo Strange.
Just
right?
Through thinking.
Yeah. So yeah, it's almost insulting knowing that and seeing Bane in this movie played by this this wrestler. And he's just muscle, and he puts bombs down the ground and repeats just that.
Bane.
Bomb. Yeah. Bomb.
He's there to make toys.
Monkey work. But, he has this guttural yell that I can't mimic. It's a very satisfying sound to me. I don't know why.
It's like that. We need to like make a CD like Gus's Sounds of the 90s. It's like his guttural yell, and track 12 is yeah.
Exactly.
kids, Hot Wheels.
It's just a nostalgic thing, I suppose. Yeah. But, yeah, Bane...
Like, I won't go up and yell like that.
Bane doesn't do it for anybody in this movie. No. What is your favorite part of this movie? Whether it's a concept, a scene,
I think it's ultimately the fact that they don't just defeat Mr. Freeze at the end.
Oh.
Like, Mr. Freeze, so many times in a lot of these movies, you don't have a redemption to the villain, and Mr. Freeze does... have the redemption. He has the very... We just did Spider-Man 3, and Sandman has a bit of a redemption at the end of that movie. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of people, you yourself included, I'm sure, like Sandman, is because he's this sympathetic villain, and at the end, he kind of has his redemption. Same with this movie, where Mr. Freeze is this villain, and then you understand why he wants to kill Batman now, because right. He was trying to save his wife, and he was doing bad things to save her, but then ultimately now he wants to kill Batman because he thinks Batman killed his wife, and now he's this sympathetic villain, and now he's just a good guy, and he saves Alfred, ultimately. Like, that's a good... Like I said, Mr. Freeze is my favorite part of this movie.
Yeah.
So his ultimate conclusion to his story is probably my favorite part overall, is that you get to kind of see his story play out and finish, not just with him, like, getting beaten and then, like, stealing the cure from him. Like, they could have easily done that. Like, we beat him and we take the cure. But instead, he gives him it and then,
Yeah,
has his little ice jail. You also get to see Arkham Asylum in this one.
Take two of these and call me in the morning.
You get to see more Arkham Asylum in this one. Which is cool.
That's actually my personal favorite part, is Freeze in his cell.
Yeah.
I don't know why I really like that, with like the chill zone.
Yeah.
Like, you can't leave that little circle. But what doesn't make sense to me, just going off of, that's my favorite part, it's kind of cozy to me, is the very...
George Clooney's Clooney neck?
Yeah. It's the very, very ending when Poison Ivy's in her cell in Arkham Asylum playing Loves Me, Loves Me Not with a Flower, and all of a sudden, in the corner, the Freeze's suit lights up. He's like, I'm your new cellmate. I'm here to make your life a living hell. Because he finds out that Poison Ivy's really the one who unplugged his wife. Why did they give him his suit back? His, like, supercharged suit?
Like, here, we'll give you your suit so you can kill her.
The prison,
it's fair trial.
The prison guards will turn their heads.
Yeah. Maybe he broke out and got it himself.
We
don't know. They didn't care. They didn't even know the answer to that. They're like, fuck it. That's kind of how this whole movie went. They're like, yeah, fuck it.
This is what I'll say overall about this movie. And that is, it's not a good movie. I enjoy it sometimes, and that's what I mean sometimes. This is the kind of movie that is fun to watch with mates, have the buds over, watch Batman and Robin. It's good to watch if you're under the influence, you know? Like,
the only way.
Yeah, it makes you feel a little loose.
You watch it without, and you're like, I'm dizzy.
That's what I did. I watched the Stone Cold Sober by myself. I'm like, oh, man. What else can I do other than this?
What if Stone Cold was Mr. Freeze?
That's the bottom line. I'm going to stomp a mud hole in your mountain cap and walk it dry. And that can lead us right to the factory here.
Indeed, indeed. You ready to do it?
Indeed.
All right, so in this point in the show, this is where we take the film we just watched and we submit it to the factory. That's where we take the film and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same movie, same story, just different booking for the modern audience. So with that being said, today we're looking, in terms of actors and actresses, we're looking at Mr. Freeze, we're looking at Poison Ivy, and we're going to do Batgirl, because we've done Batman, we've done Robin in the past, obviously we did Batman Forever last year, and then do you want to do director? We didn't really touch base on the music, we did Batman Forever, and the music in this movie is good.
You know, it's fun. But that's my problem with the music too, just now that you mentioned it, because I thought of it, it is almost entirely recycled from Batman Forever.
Duh. Da, 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 da.
That's fine. That's the theme.
Da, 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 da.
But I'm talking like other music beats and cues that are clearly from Batman Forever. They just put them in this movie. It's almost like there was no original score created other than like soundtrack music, which some of the soundtrack music slaps. Some of it. But
did you put that? Is that on Spotify? Let's find out.
What, Batman and Robin?
Batman and Robin's OST.
Batman and Robin slaps.
That'd be my playlist.
Oh, I bet.
Batman and Robin. Yeah, music from the movie.
Yeah.
There's movie from and inspired by the motion picture. The first song is Look Into My Eye, Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Is there a song called Fun For Me on there?
Like this?
That's my shit right there. That one, that plays when they're like getting ready to go on the motorcycle race. 3-5-4, fun for me.
The Batman fun overture. I wonder if that's that. Ba-ba-ba-ba.
Has to be. Which I don't mind as a theme song.
Elliot Goldenthal. Yeah, it is. That's legit. This is on Spotify.
That's good shit.
Well, there you go. That I like that theme. That screams Batman to me almost as much as the Batman Returns and Batman 89 intros. Like those, mm-hmm. Those are both great themes. This is just as good in my opinion.
Ooh, Bill, knock the mic.
Between your stomach and slapping the mic.
I'm a mess.
We've done director, we've done composer in the past for Batman Forever. If you want to hear those, head back there and check them out. Mr. Freeze, Poison Ivy, Batgirl. How about?
Tough. Who are you thinking?
I have Batgirl strictly because I've seen this before. I've seen it like fan castings of it as well as like fan art of it. And I like the look. I think it would look really good. And she's a fantastic actress. So I think she fit the part. She'd fit the part more comic related.
Okay.
Where it's the Barbara Gordon of the comics with like the reddish hair. Commissioner Gordon's actual daughter. And not like Uncle Alfred's niece. But Anya Taylor-Joy.
Okay.
Have you ever seen those before? Mm-mm. I'll show you it real quick. It's actually really good. Princess Peach herself. But Anya Taylor-Joy, this is strictly on look, and also, I mean, she's a great actress.
Oh, yeah. The Witch and Split and Queen's Gambit and Need you say more?
Yeah, but I've seen, if you type in Anya Taylor-Joy Batgirl, there's good fan castings of her, and like people have like taken pictures of her and like put on the Batgirl suit, and like it's pretty legit. Like, I was like, yeah, I could see it. Like, Batgirl as Anya Taylor-Joy, it looks like it'd be a legit casting, and I think she would do well in the role. I mean, if she can pull off Princess Peach,
then we'll find out.
Better than Scarlett Johansson, because that's who we picked.
Yeah. I do love Anya Taylor-Joy. She's one of my favorite actresses working today. I'm going with Hailee Steinfeld. She is going to be Hawk Girl, Hawkeye Girl, whatever her name's going to be.
I think it's just Hawkeye.
And the Hawkeye,
I think she's
show.
The new Hawkeye.
Yes. Yeah. So we know she's going to be dipping her toe into some superhero action, but she's amazing.
DC.
She's an amazing actress in True Grit. She was...
She the rattlesnake girl?
Huh?
She were the rattlesnake girl in True Grit?
Sure.
She falls into the rattlesnake pit.
Yeah, True Grit.
Yeah, the rattlesnake
great.
Girl.
Yeah.
Yuck.
She's in Bumblebee. Oh, boy. So, and she's Spider-Gwen. But yeah, she's my pick for Batgirl.
Into the Spider-Verse?
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. I was like, I haven't done a live action of that yet. Yeah.
So she can do the action stuff, she's a great actress, she's the right age to play the role as well, I believe, and yeah, she'd be a good pick, so it's been a while. Do you care to do the honors?
Indeed.
Flipping the coin.
So, heads, me, tails, you, I lost it in that light for a second.
But you caught it.
Yeah, I did catch it right between heads.
Heads. Anya
Taylor-Joy as Batgirl. Next up, we'll go with Uma Thurman's replacement, Poison Ivy. Who you got for Poison Ivy?
This one's tough, man. Because there's a few that come to mind. I want to say Margot Robbie, but she's like so affiliated with DC.
Yeah, and already.
Being Harley Quinn. Part of my gut makes me want to say Megan Fox, because I've just like you did with Anya Taylor-Joy, seeing like fan fiction pictures.
Yeah.
I've seen those of Poison Ivy.
And she's this character in this movie is like a very seductive character, and
yeah,
that's for what I mean. Megan Fox, I think, is a good actress, and what she's given but she's known for being like seductive. Jennifer's Body, like,
yeah,
it's basically that.
So I had one more, but I'll stick with Megan Fox.
Megan Fox
as my Poison Ivy.
So I was kind of stuck between a couple on this one. I did go with Margot Robbie, even though I know she's Harley Quinn and that's kind of what people would see her as. But again, I was thinking seduction and seductive nature. I think Margot Robbie in Wolf of Wall Street. I recently, well, it was a couple weeks back, but started to rewatch through Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which she's not like a seductive person in that, but she's Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
And I think she's really just a great actress in everything she's in. I haven't seen I, Tonya yet, but she was nominated in I, Tonya, right?
I, Tonya.
She's great. She's just great in everything she's been in.
Yeah, she has a lot of, like, some that, at least in this movie, this role, you have to be able to ham it up to.
Yeah.
It is very much a comic book role,
yeah.
Not to be taken too seriously. And yeah, I think she'd be good for that too. So,
heads me, tails you. Heads again.
Oh my.
Margot Robbie. It has been a while. The coin giveth.
My coin will take it away.
But lastly, we have our Mr. Freeze.
Hi,
Mr. Freeze. So this one's difficult for me because, like I said, I don't know if you can take anyone like that will be on par with Arnold. Yeah.
Mm.
Like, I don't know if you can find it. So I have someone in mind, but they wouldn't be able to play him in the same way. They'd almost have to play him more serious.
I have someone too. I wonder if we have the same person.
I don't know.
Look me in the eyes.
I don't know. Go.
I'm going with, unfortunately, making this actor who has hair put him in another role where he doesn't have hair, and that's Bryan Cranston.
Okay. Mine is different.
Okay. Bryan Cranston, he can be comedic.
Yes.
As seen in, what's that show? Malcolm in the Middle.
Yes.
And in life. He's a very funny individual.
Seen as that great comedy Breaking Bad. In Godzilla, 2014.
But yes, in Godzilla and in Breaking Bad, the serious, the heavy performances, he's one of the best to do it right now. And I think he'd look good in that suit. I'd believe him more as a doctor. Dr. Freeze, you know what I mean?
Dr. Freeze. So mine again would be much more serious. Serious take. I don't know if he would play it as hammed up and whatnot, but hear me out. So see Mr. Freeze here in this picture I'm showing you, yeah?
Yes.
That Mr. Freeze there. Now, picture this. Picture that, Mr. Freeze.
I shit you not. As you were talking about, I was like, you know, I'm in that kind of mood. Maybe him. But no, I'm with you there.
It's honestly, so I'm choosing Daniel Craig. Honestly, it was, I was seeing a bunch of, when we were prepping for this, I've been seeing all the ads and whatnot for the new James Bond movie. And Daniel Craig has naturally really icy blue eyes.
Yeah.
And I was kind of thinking, I was like, that would lend itself, and he's got a more serious nature. He'd be able to, I think, yes, considerably, but playing that at Mr. Freeze, I was between that and Ed Harris. I think Ed Harris would be really good as a serious Mr. Freeze, a more comic book based Mr. Freeze.
You know, Ed Harris, I think, is a little old now.
True.
He's in his 70s now.
Yeah. Back in the day, though. Abyss Ed Harris.
Yeah. No, that's a great pick. He would have been great.
But Daniel Craig. Now, I mean, Daniel Craig has done comedic roles or sillier roles.
Yeah, he's fine guy.
Logan Lucky.
Lucky Logan, and he's been on SNL a few times. He's got comedic chops. He just has not really stretched them much in at least late.
And he's got films. A British accent, so.
He has a pretty good American one, too.
He does, but got this. So,
he's got in Tomb Raider, I believe. He's American.
Yeah, that's one of his first movies. So, heads, me, tails, you, and here we go, and heads, motherfucker.
I was going to give it to you, because I really did think of Daniel Craig early, and I was like, maybe that's just my gut saying, because I'm in a Bond mood.
Nah, I think Daniel Craig would be a really good Mr. Freeze. I just think he'd work really well in this role, and that's how it'd be. So, I swept it clean. We got Batgirl as Anya Taylor-Joy. We got Poison Ivy as, I almost said Uma Thurman, as Margot Robbie, and Daniel Craig playing Mr. Freeze and that. So, with that being said, any questions before we go?
Has there been a Batman rogue that has not been featured in a movie that you would like to see in a Batman movie?
Hush.
Hush?
Hush,
oh, baby.
Hush, or are they one and the same? Is Azrael Hush?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
Because I always like that, too. If they were ever to do, a Batman 4 in the Dark Knight trilogy, it would have been... I guess they really can't do that. But, if that in the comics, the Bat gets broken, Azrael comes in and takes over for Batman, and he ultimately kind of becomes a bad guy when Batman comes back.
Yeah.
But Hush, I've always thought, was a really cool character. I mean, Red Hood would be great to see in live action form. I mean, they've done them in live action shows.
Right.
Teen Titans show. That's what I'm saying,
in a Batman setting.
But no, I think Hush has always been really cool. A cool character. Hush is a childhood friend of Bruce Wayne. And he has a neat backstory, and they really haven't dove deep into his kind of background. They keep revisiting a lot of the same characters, and that's why I'm kind of excited that in this new Batman movie they seem to at least be planting the seeds for different villains. You have the Riddler, Paul Dano playing the Riddler, and you have Penguin by Colin Farrell.
Catwoman
in there by Zoe Kravitz.
Mm-hmm. And there's rumor that I won't spread here on the show that there might be an even bigger threat within that world that we're not seeing yet in the trailers.
So it's they've done all these different villains, and I think I've always thought that it'd be fun to see those. I mean, seeing the Man Bat would be fun, I think, and to see if they could pull that off. Even Clayface would be fun. I would say ultimately, just because I remember wanting to see this back in the day, but Black Mask, but they just did Black Mask with it.
Yeah, I would have said Black Mask, but they did him in Birds of Prey and didn't do him right.
No.
So,
but Ewan.
But it was Ewan. because that.
But also human.
He could do some fucked up stuff with him, but they didn't. Same with Clayface. He's a tragic character, and he could be interesting. He's just a little on the unbelievable side.
So yeah, same with Man-Bat.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Killer Croc too.
Who's who's the ventriloquist?
Scarface and Ventriloquist. Scarface.
He was always cool.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
He was always cool. I'm thinking, like, because the animated series did so many fun ones, just like one-offs or like brief little ones, and they sprinkle in all the others.
Yeah.
I
would like a really fucked up version of the Mad Hatter.
Yeah. He'd be cool.
Really, like, dark, twisted.
He'd be Mad more Hatter. Like the Joker, though. That's the thing.
They all kind of are. If yeah, you think. Like, true. Like Riddler.
Riddler is a lot like the Joker.
Can be. It's all in how it's.
I'm curious as how Paul Dano is going to play him. But yeah, and I think that would be my big one is seeing Hush. I've been interested in Hush to see more from him. But
what if they adapted an episode of the animated series into a hour and a half feature length film, The Man Who Killed Batman, Sid the Squid. Remember that one?
Yeah, I do. If they did an adaptation of any of the Batman animated series, I would actually not take it from the animated series itself. I'd cheat. I'd do the the first little bit of Batman Beyond, like old Batman training a younger Batman. I think that would be really cool.
It looks like it's leading into that because it's rumored that Michael Keaton has signed on to do multiple portrayals now going forward.
I think it'd be cool. It'd be like Creed, but Batman. Like it'd be cool. And Batman Beyond, I think in retrospect, deserved more credit for what it was trying to do and introduce and stuff.
Mic again. I just rewatched a lot of Batman Beyond recently. I watched season one recently, and it's a very good show.
Yeah, a neat idea. It's a really cool idea. More dystopian Gotham, and it's falling into shambles, and they need Batman, but Batman isn't there anymore, and he never trained a successor. And you can even do fun. I don't know. Do they do it? Do they bring back like Nightwing in Batman Beyond at all?
No.
Because they could do that.
They do, sort of, in Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, their movie. Dick Grayson's in that, but he's old.
Yeah. But like things like that where you could introduce different characters and whatnot, it'd be fun.
And Batman Beyond has one of the sexiest theme song intros ever.
Is that like really high pitch and techno-y, if I recall?
Yeah.
Is that how it goes? Does it go?
Nah.
What am I thinking of? It does that. Chalk zone?
Chalk. 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 Chalk.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, that is the show. Hope you enjoyed it. If you liked your show, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That is our primary site. That's where we post the show to first, and then subsequently it gets posted everywhere else. So Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, we're there. You can also find us over at Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, clips of the show, and posts of when things go live. That's at The Bros Movie Pod. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Go to Facebook. Type in The Brothers Movie Factory. Learn it well, because it is the chilling sound of your doom. And look around, because I like to make memes that go along with what we're watching each and every week. And I put links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter.
Yeah.
And that.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, brothers.
Brothers.